From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context, your source for all things Korea. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. There has been a lot going on the last few days. I don't know if any of you have gotten any sleep, but we've certainly been very busy watching everything unfold in Singapore and seeing also the reactions now that the summit is over. And we have seen a little bit of some details on what may have been agreed to, what the next steps may be. There was a lot of shock, a little bit of disappointment. So we'll definitely be talking about that in our podcast here today. I'm excited to say our guest here on the podcast this week is Ambassador Jim Zumwalt, who had an extensive career in the State Department and a great expert in East Asian affairs. He was also the U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Senegal and the Republic of Guinea-Bissau, and he is now the Chief Executive Officer of Sasakawa Peace Foundation USA. Sasakawa USA and KEI collaborated on a really great panel earlier today on the summit. We had some really fantastic experts, including Ambassador Zumwalt, so please do go check that out on the KEI YouTube page. I know Sasakawa will also be posting some things about this event as well, so be sure to check that out. But for now, let's get into the conversation. Ambassador Zumwalt, thank you so much for taking your time, for helping plan the event earlier today, and then, of course, for talking to me here on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think it's a great collaboration between KEI and Sasakawa Peace Foundation USA.
So to start off, we're talking about the summit. We've been watching it. I know that a lot of people stayed up all night just to see what was going to happen at 4 a.m. U.S. time. Were there any specific elements that surprised you as you were watching this unfold?
I think what surprised me the most was the President Trump's press conference, where he talked about not implementing U.S. ROK military exercises. That was surprising because in the past, Secretary Mattis had said that U.S. ROK exercises are an alliance issue to be discussed between the U.S. and ROK. And yet here it appears that President Trump made a decision about these exercises without consulting with our ally. And that, I think, if that's true, that sent a very dangerous signal to all of our allies, not only the Republic of Korea.
Right. I think a lot of people were really surprised by that. What do you make of this kind of back and forth now? Do we even know at this point whether the exercises are going to continue?
We don't know what would be canceled, what will continue. But specifically, two of the things that President Trump said that concerned me. One was his adoption of North Korean characterizations of when he said he thought these exercises were provocative. That's something North Korea has claimed. The United States and the Republic of Korea has always said these are defensive exercises designed to respond to contingencies. So adopting that rhetoric was of concern. And then the second thing he said that concerned me was his comments that the exercises are expensive. And the message from that is that maybe the United States does not have the resources to support our alliance commitments, or we don't have the will to support our alliance commitments. And again, that's a very dangerous signal for the United States to be sending. And this is not only for Korea, but for Japan and other allies who are counting on United States security guarantees.
Here at KEI, we obviously focus on some of the South Korea, U.S., and then U.S.-North Korea relations. In terms of the Korean response, the South Korean response to that statement at the press conference, a lot of it has been a little bit confusion, wait and see. They haven't really come out necessarily one way or the other because also we don't know. What has been Japan's response? Have they said anything about this comment?
Certainly in public, Prime Minister Abe and his chief cabinet secretary, his chief spokesperson Suga, have both been very positive about the summit. They have said things like, this is a good first step toward attaining our shared goal of denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula. So the public posture has been very positive. But I think behind the scenes, there are great concerns that perhaps Japan's security interests will not be addressed. But I think the biggest concern Japan has, frankly, is the credibility of the United States as an ally. So going forward, I think there'll be a pretty heavy burden on Secretary of State Pompeo, on Secretary of Defense Mattis, to reassure our ally, Japan, that we will not be sacrificing Japanese interests in the pursuit of some kind of an agreement with North Korea.
One thing that struck people in the lead up to this summit, and we had on our podcast last week, Ambassador Zhou Yun, and this is one thing that he specifically said, was that this was a top-down summit as opposed to most summits, which start at the working level, and particularly with a very sensitive, possibly sensitive issues like this. So as a former diplomat, do you see the sped-up process or this top-down process having made any difference in how things turned out in the end?
Well, it certainly makes a difference in the sense that the decision maker in North Korea is Kim Jong-un. And until now, the United States and various episodes of engaging has not had the opportunity to engage directly with the North Korean leader. So in that sense, I think there was success in the sense that there was this engagement. And I certainly think we can say that one positive result of Singapore is that tensions between the United States and North Korea have been reduced. So the risk of some kind of unexpected attack on United States interests or even some accidental conflict because of misunderstanding of an action on the other side, that risk has gone down dramatically, and that's positive. Diplomacy is always better than military action. That said, long term, I am concerned about the impact on United States alliance relationships as we proceed with testing whether North Korea is in fact serious in its desire to in its stated desire to abandon its nuclear weapons system. And the United States certainly ought to be very aware that our alliances are a source of strength for the United States, but they require nurturing and tending. And so we need to continue working closely with the Republic of Korea and Japan, and also with other supporters, with China and Russia, who have major interests as well. We will be needing to engage with those countries as well as we continue to test whether North Korea, in fact, is serious or not.
I want to follow up on this question about Japan's role. Like I said, I don't follow Japan closely, but I was quite taken aback by the fact that Prime Minister Abe showed up in Washington multiple times, including right before the summit. He seemed very concerned or very wanting to make sure that his personal agenda was at least in front of Trump, and he knew what Japan wanted. Trump knew what Japan wanted. How did you see Prime Minister Abe's role, or what do you think he wanted to get out of this, these multiple visits with Trump? And finally, do you think he got that now that we've seen the summit?
No, I think your assessment is accurate that because Japan, as well as Republic of Korea, has such major interests at stake, Prime Minister Abe wanted to make sure that President Trump was aware of Japan's interests and would not be ignoring those interests moving forward. In most cases, the United States and Japan share common interests. For example, North Korea's missile program, the long-range missiles which threaten the United States' heartland, also are of concern to Japan because we provide an extended deterrence guarantee, and North Korea's ability to directly attack the United States might undermine the strength of that commitment. At least there's that concern. The medium-range missiles that North Korea has threaten Japan, but they also threaten the U.S. military bases in Japan. So both of us share a desire to constrain that program. So in many cases, our interests align. One area where Japan has a special interest is resolve the issue of Japanese citizens who were abducted from Japan to North Korea in the 1970s and 80s. But again, I would argue as an American, we also have interests in that issue because we're a democratic nation that stands for human rights. And seeing people who are kidnapped and their liberty is deprived, that's a human rights issue. And so we are very supportive of resolving those kinds of human rights issues. That said, at the end of the day, it's really up to Japan and North Korea to resolve this issue since it involves Japanese nationals who were abducted to North Korea. So the proper role for the United States is to support Japan. I understand that President Trump assured Prime Minister Abe that he did raise this issue with Kim Jong-un, and I think the Japanese government is happy that President Trump raised this. Certainly the Japanese media are talking about this. But now, really, I think the ball is in the Japanese government's court to engage directly with North Korea and see whether there's an opportunity to resolve this issue quickly.
Yeah, I think this is just kind of speculation on my part, but it seems that President Trump really connects with these human stories, or with these stories where he can see someone's face. For example, Otto Warmbier, he had really took that story on, and something that he didn't necessarily pay attention to, general human rights in North Korea. Ji Sung-ho, who came to the State of the Union. So I wonder if Prime Minister Abe was able to put those faces in front of President Trump, and that might be something that really resonated with him.
No, I think you're exactly right. And as I understand it, President Trump has met with some Japanese family members of abductees and talked with them about the anguish they face, that their daughter, their brother suddenly disappeared. And for many years, they had no idea what even happened. And only much later did the North Korean government acknowledge that these were people who'd been kidnapped by North Koreans and taken away. So there's a lot of anguish in Japan, a lot of, frankly, of anger. But I'm very hopeful that this might represent an opportunity for North Korea and Japan to finally resolve this issue and put it behind them so that Japan and North Korea can pursue a more positive relationship in the context of all of us moving forward with North Korea.
So getting back to the summit, a lot of analysts, and including we talked about this a lot on our panel today, were a little bit skeptical or a little bit frustrated that the statement was quite vague, or that there weren't stronger commitments on denuclearization from the North Koreans. But I'm wondering, now that the summit is over, what can we hope to see in the next few weeks that might make it more concrete? Or do you think there are some steps that we can make relatively quickly to move this forward and kind of dispel some of that skepticism?
No, I too was disappointed to read the statement and see or not see some concrete commitments and steps moving forward, because I am, given the past history of engagement with North Korea, I have been rather skeptical that North Korea, in fact, is serious. And it seemed to me the best way for North Korea to demonstrate that now things are different, we have a new approach, would be to make some upfront payments, if you will, in the form of concrete steps that can be verified. And that was missing from the document. I think President Trump at this summit prioritized developing the warm personal relationship between leaders so that as negotiations proceed, he has the kind of relationship where he could intervene as necessary if talks get off track or if there's some point. So we won't know for a while whether that approach of prioritizing developing a relationship versus negotiating concrete steps was the wise one or not. Maybe in a year from now, we'll have a better sense. But it certainly was a very different approach. But going forward, what clearly will be needed now is for Secretary Pompeo and his North Korean counterpart to begin some negotiations where there are some visible steps taken going forward, such as a North Korean declaration of its nuclear program, such as some agreements on perhaps eliminating facilities or capping production or other sorts of things. I think without these concrete and visible steps in the short term, the skepticism will only grow and it will become more and more difficult to proceed in this track.
I'm glad you brought up Secretary Pompeo. I'm wondering, since you have spent time in the State Department, how unusual is it for the Secretary of State to take such a personal, put such a personal stake in and to spend so much of his time doing some sort of legwork like this? I mean, he went to North Korea himself. Is it unusual, or do you think that's really been helpful to have him be so personally invested?
Well, as you mentioned, this has been a top-down approach rather than a bottom-up approach, so it is different than the past. But we haven't been very successful in the past, so it's time. I think, I can't speak for government officials today because I'm out of government, but I can imagine that their reaction at the beginning when President Trump announced, "I'm going to meet with Kim Jong-un directly," just like mine, there was shock, disagreement, perhaps concern. But then as government officials, you know, the job of a U.S. government official is to help the elected leadership of this country be successful. So you can set aside your own personal skepticism, your own perhaps you think you might have done things differently, but the decision's been made. And so now the goal is to help our president be successful. And I'm sure all of my colleagues or former colleagues at the CIA, at the Defense Department, at the State Department were working as hard as they could to try and help this summit be successful. I was very glad gratified to see people like Ambassador Song Kim, who has deep background in the six-party process, knows a lot of the North Koreans, Randy Shriver from the Defense Department. So I think we had a good group of American experts who have background and experience in the how we've dealt with North Korea in the past, trying to assist Secretary Pompeo. But Secretary Pompeo is someone who's very close to President Trump. The North Koreans know that. And so I think he brought a lot of credibility to the table when he was talking to the North Koreans. So as I said, I'm skeptical this process will be successful, but I do think it's worth pursuing, because even if it's only a small chance that we'll be successful, we don't want to leave a possibility of a dramatic agreement or to not pursue that possibility. So we should be pursuing that possibility, but at the same time, not undermining our other interests in the region and certainly our relationships with our allies.
I've seen a lot of experts ahead of the summit cautioning against bringing up too many other issues and weighing down the summit, saying that President Trump should basically focus on denuclearization at this point, and then try to bring in some of these things later. I'm talking about, you know, the conventional artillery that are pointed at Seoul right now, cyber capabilities, human rights. There was a lot of fear of overloading the summit and causing it to fail. But now that we're on the other side of the summit, how do you start to weave in some of these things that honestly do need to be brought up at some point? What do you think about those other issues?
No, it's very important to a very good question. First of all, I think raising the issues that are the most urgent is important. And one of the issues that's very urgent is proliferation. And North Korea in the past has proliferated nuclear technology with Syria, with Libya, and others. And it's not possible for the United States to have an engaged new relationship with North Korea if they are selling nuclear technology to rogue actors in the world. That just is a non-starter for us and for others. So that is a discussion that has to, it may already have happened, but it does need to come. It's not something you can put off. I think other issues, again, from the perspective of if the goal of North Korea is to have a new relationship with the United States where we can work together, have economic ties, a nation like that doesn't attack American companies using cyber attacks to rob banks or damage computer systems of other countries. So I do think if the goal really is a broad relationship where we engage, there are certain norms of behavior that need to be respected. And so I do think it's important to be talking about those issues, not in a threatening way, but just defining. We talk a lot about what does denuclearization mean and defining that, but we also need to define what does a new relationship mean. And in my view, a new relationship means we're not suffering from cyber attacks or other kinds of illicit activities. And in exchange for that, we can then talk about investments and other sorts of activities that might help the North Korean economy grow.
So we talked a lot earlier about Japan's role, about Prime Minister Abe's role. So I'd be remiss not to ask about President Moon as well. In a lot of ways, he is the key to this having even gotten to this point after the detente between the two Koreas earlier this year. So how do you see his role going forward? And do you see him taking a more active role in a trilateral type of a talk at any point?
No, I certainly have a lot of respect for President Moon and his accomplishments so far. He really has succeeded first as a catalyst in breaking the ice and convincing the United States that there really might be an opportunity here to pursue. So that role as catalyst was important. Then he assumed a role maybe as a coach, if you will, trying to help both sides, I suspect. I mean, I don't know about with North Korea, but I suspect he had discussions with Kim Jong-un about what to expect in talks with the United States and how to approach the issue. And then, you know, now as a cheerleader, you know, you're seeing the two teams out there playing on the field and you can cheer them on, urge them to greater efforts. So all of those roles are very, very important. One role that I would caution against President Moon would be the role of mediator, because the United States and the Republic of Korea are allies, and we're allied against the threat from North Korea. Now, that may change in the future, but that's the circumstance right now. And a mediator is a neutral party between two adversaries. So I think that kind of nomenclature rubs people in Washington a bit the wrong way. And so I would encourage President Moon to continue in his role as catalyst, as coach, as cheerleader, facilitating the process. Going forward, I think it's very important for the Republic of Korea as they've been doing, to be talking with other parties who have interest, with Japan, with China, with Russia, and trying to play that role of bringing parties together and reminding people of the stakes at play. So, I'm not being critical here. I think President Moon has done a really outstanding job, but there's a lot more work to be done if we're going to be successful, and I certainly anticipate and hope that he will continue his energetic efforts.
All right. Before we sign off here, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you really want to make sure you mention?
I think one thing I would like to mention to our American audience is it's important for us to recognize that the Korean Peninsula was divided by outsiders, by the United States and by Russia. And from the perspective of the Korean people, there is a recognition that this is one country, one culture, and a desire ultimately to see unification. And that's something that we need to be very respectful of. We need to understand why the South Korean president so much wants to be at the center of this, because this is about his country and the future of his country. So I think it's important for we Americans to be very respectful of that and to be helping our friends, because South Korea is a democratic ally. I think the United States does support reunification of the peninsula under peaceful terms and under a democratic government. So we need to be very respectful of those very strong views on the part of our South Korean friends.
All right. Thank you again for all your time and your great insights. And we'll be continuing to watch very closely, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for inviting me today.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us here on Korean Context. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts, feedback for us, or any topics that you think we should cover on the podcast, please do reach out. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at our website, keia.org. We would love to hear from you. So thank you again, and we'll see you here next week.